And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, let's get it rolling here on a Wednesday. The aftermath as we await the formation of Buffalo's practice squad. We do know what Buffalo's 53-man roster is for now. And it's likely to have a few tweaks in the coming days, the extent of which we do not know just yet, but I'm sure we will sooner rather than later. So some moves to still be worked through, some roster gymnastics, as we often call it here on the show, to be taken care of, especially in light of the fact, Steve, that Buffalo's current 53-man roster is without a punter.
They got 52 other guys that can punt. Special teams are overrated. No, they'll get one. I mean,
yeah. No, I'm not worried about it. I'm just saying we know that roster changes are coming from the initial 53-man roster that was assembled yesterday, announced at 4:30 p.m. is not going to be the final iteration of the roster when we get to game one in L.A. next week.
And I'll say this: it says something too about all these guys that we were the Bills fans, and you and I even too at times were like, "Wow, we're this guy, you know, this guy." If they cut them, they're never going to see him again. None of these guys got picked up. The one guy that got picked up by the Giants was
Nick McLeod.
Nick McLeod got picked up by the Giants. That's it. Isaiah Hodgins is still out.
Well, no, there's four players that got claimed on waivers by other teams.
Say him.
From the Bills.
Say him.
So it's Luke Tenuta, who got picked up by the Colts, an offensive lineman. He was their last pick in the draft, did not make this roster. Tanner Owen, an undrafted rookie offensive lineman, got claimed by the Saints. Nick McLeod got claimed by the Giants. And pass rusher Kingsley Jonathan, the Syracuse product, who was an undrafted rookie, got claimed by the Chicago Bears. The four players claimed from the Bills by other clubs in the league is the second highest number of players from one roster.
That's right. So Nick McLeod is the one guy that we thought, you know, he saw some time for this club. The other guys, you'd be hard-pressed to go back and scrub social media accounts and find anybody who knew who they were or thought they were going to make this team ever, or were even sad about them being cut. Certainly their families were and all that, but those are the guys that got picked up, and just this just in, it's all big guys except for McLeod, right? Tanner Owen,
Kingsley Jonathan.
Right. They're all big guys.
Two offensive linemen, one defensive end, and a DB.
So Blackshear's still there. Hodgins is still there. All these guys that, you know, people were really panicking about.
Brandon Bryant's still there. Who had a nice preseason.
That surprises me. Those guys surprise me. But it should tell you about, you know, if you want them back, they're there to be had. And it'll be interesting to see if the Bills do sign all of those guys back that we were so worried about them losing.
So to bring you up to speed, the waiver claim, the deadline to file waiver claims for a player ended at noon today. That's why the full list was submitted and sent out by the league. The Bills were 25th in the waiver order. So even if they liked somebody better than what they had on their 53-man roster right now, there was a very slim chance that that player would slip as far as 25 for the Bills to claim somebody. They had no waiver claims. So the roster that got formed yesterday currently is still the same. It could be subject to change for a couple of reasons that we'll get into in a second. So as of an hour ago, teams had the green light to begin assembling their 16-player practice squads, which can be made up of a maximum of 10 players who have no more than two accrued seasons of NFL service. You can have a maximum of six veteran players with no limits on their number of NFL accrued seasons. Players who would seem to be candidates for the Bills practice squad are young players, like Steve mentioned, like Raheem Blackshear, Alec Anderson, the undrafted rookie offensive lineman from UCLA, Jamarcus Ingram, the UB product, undrafted cornerback. I would have put Nick McLeod and Kingsley Jonathan in that category too, but they got claimed by other teams. They're currently on 53-man rosters. Players that are not vested veterans that figure to be considerations for Buffalo's practice squad: Brandon Bryant, Isaiah Hodgins, as Steve mentioned, and Tanner Gentry. And then vets that could be on the practice squad: Matt Barkley, Greg Manns, Joe Giles Harris, Duke Johnson. So those are just some names that we believe are good candidates for Buffalo's practice squad this year. As soon as we have those names and as soon as they are official, we will pass them along for you. As for the roster itself, that's what we're discussing today. What were your initial takeaways from the initial 53-man roster that was put together yesterday, Steve?
Like you thought, I mean, we knew in large measure who they were all going to be. I think we anticipated
Tre'Davious White going to reserve PUP. Right.
The closer it got without anything changing on Tre'Davious White front, the more you knew it was going to be the PUP. Certainly they have every intent and have never wavered from the fact they expect him to play this year. It's not going to be like they're going to put him on IR and wait for 2023.
Right. The ramp-up period is what's going to be of greatest interest here. When is he fully cleared? Now, we know he can't start practicing until week five under the rules of reserve PUP. So he is missing the first four games. He's not practicing with the team for the first 4 weeks. That's definitive. He can start practicing with the club as soon as week five. Do you throw him into a game right away in week five? That's what remains to be seen. Or do you give him a little bit more of a ramp-up period to get acclimated? The Bills have some interesting opponents there.
He's got,
in week five, six, and then the bye week is week seven.
Think about it. It's five is Pittsburgh, six is Kansas City, seven's the bye, eight is the Pack.
There's no good time to bring him back. Those are all teams
but
with
I will
talented
say this,
wide receivers.
It'll be after the October 2nd Baltimore Ravens game, so it'll be October 3rd, that 21-day window will begin, and he'll be able to get ready to play the Steelers, the Kansas City Chiefs, and then the bye week, and then Green Bay. I think you get those 2 weeks, those 14 days, and on that Monday after the Kansas City game going into the bye week, or maybe it'll be the Monday before the Packers game, the I don't know if it's a Sunday night game or a Monday night game, I can't tell, at 8:30 p.m.,
is a Sunday night.
You'll find out on that Monday after the Chiefs game or perhaps the Monday of the bye week that Tre'Davious White is up and running. That'll be the Monday of the bye week is the deadline.
Right. I put together a write-up on BuffaloBills.com, top five things to kind of take away from this initial formation of the roster. Number one was clearly Tre'Davious White's designation going to reserve PUP. Among the other things that caught my eye in the initial formation of the roster was how they went heavy at defensive back. They kept 10, not counting Tre'Davious White. So will they have to make a roster change there when Tre'Davious comes back, unless there's an injury of some kind in the first 4 weeks? That will likely be the case. So someone could very well be moved off the roster at that position group. Among the other things that we discovered in the formation of the roster, as we said at the top of the show, the team still needs a punter. They have 53 players on the roster. One of those spots is going to have to be vacated, so they have a punter next week, Thursday, to play against the Rams. My suspicion is that it'll be Speedy Stevenson, who is on the 53-man roster but underwent foot surgery after injuring his foot early in training camp. So the timetable for his return to me is very unclear. He hasn't even been mentioned. And so because of that, I think an IR designation is very likely, where then he too would miss at least the first four games. And we don't know what his timetable is, but I think it would be very surprising to know he's even in the mix for week one. He hasn't practiced in weeks. So he would seem to be a prime candidate to create a roster spot for the punter, much like he did last year. He was put on the roster initially and then IR'd the next day, and then they filled his spot with Reed Ferguson, who they cut for a day to kind of do those roster gymnastics before re-signing him back last year. This year it's another specialist. It's going to be whoever the punter is.
That's right. That's right. And, the other surprise, of course, we spoke about it all day yesterday, was the fact that, O.J. Howard got released.
That was probably the most notable name on the list.
That wipes the deck and makes the tight end core, I think,
a three-man group.
Yeah, and young.
Mm-hmm.
Young.
And that was the other observation to make from some of the roster decisions. Special teams play really tipped the scales in favor of some players. Not only did they keep special teams veterans like a 34-year-old Tywan Jones or a Tyler Matakavich, but if you showed some special teams ability, it tipped the scales in your favor when the 53-man roster was set. Jake Kumerow's effectiveness and experience on special teams beats out Isaiah Hodgins, who looked a little lost out there in special teams coverage because of his inexperience in that phase of the game. You could make similar conclusions about Quentin Morris and Tommy Sweeney, who play on far more special teams units than O.J. Howard, who barely played on special teams at all.
Right.
So that favored those two guys. I would even argue that rookie Baylen Spector may have gotten a roster spot because of the prowess that he showed as a young player on special teams.
And I think the thing about it is some of these guys, and it's not so much about like a guy like Baylen Spector coming out and making six special teams tackles in two games. Nothing like that. What it was the attitude they showed when they were out there on the you can tell by a guy's body language on film. You can tell by the way he handles himself in meetings. You can tell especially when a young player like a Baylen Spector, I'm not saying he did this, but this used to happen even in my day, a guy would come up to the special teams coordinator and says, give me a chance. Give me a chance. Because they knew. It goes a long way. If you got a willing kid who wants to play special teams, how can you, as a coach, how can you not take him on your wing and say, okay, I'm going to help you as much as I can because I want you on my squad. At least I got somebody who loves it and wants to play.
Yeah.
And that says something about special teams. It's one of those things where everybody takes it for granted you want to play football. Well, they don't realize that sometimes playing football doesn't mean playing in a regular position. It means being a gunner or an up back. So just the attitude alone. You know, certainly the Bills had to do some convincing for Isaiah Hodgins to say, well, okay, if I got to, I'll go play special teams and I'll see what I can do. Or you got a kid like Spector who's going, give me a chance, let's go. Let me go make the tackle. That's an enormous difference on the field. It's an enormous difference in meetings and when you have conversations and in practice and in what you can expect from the guy. And some of these guys never get that difference. And a guy like Baylen Spector, a guy like Kumerow, guys like Tywan Jones, Medakevich, there's no way he plays linebacker in the NFL. But because of special teams, a guy's like a veteran. He's like a core guy. Same thing with Saran Neal.
Yeah, just signed a nice contract this offseason because of his abilities on special teams.
These guys grow up saying, I'll do anything to play in the NFL. I'll do anything. Well, they won't cover kicks. Don't tell me you're going to do anything. You won't even cover kicks. And that's actually being on a team. So it's a real thing. And it continues to be year after year after year. I can't believe it never changes.
It was critical in some of these roster decisions
that
were made.
Kumerow, Medakevich, Tywan Jones, Spector.
Yep.
None of them make a roster if there's not special teams in the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you look down the list of linebackers on this roster, they kept six. Okay, so you have Milano and Edmonds, who start on defense.
Right.
Terrell Bernard showed an ability on special teams. Tyler Matakavich, self-explanatory. Tyrell Dotson on a lot of special teams units.
Right.
Baylen Spector, same deal. So, and linebacker is a critical position group for special teams.
Because they're big enough.
Because they're big enough and can run.
And can run. That's right. And as is tight end.
Yeah.
And fullback. And all the, safety. All
that's
these
why
guys.
Tommy Sweeney and Quentin Morris are on the roster right now.
That's exactly
because
right.
Because they can offer you something on game day on special teams in addition to being a second or a third or a move tight end behind Dawson Knox. Other observation, seven receivers on the roster initially. Again, going back to the Speedy Stevenson situation, that is likely to change, knowing he's got a foot injury and hasn't been on the practice field in weeks.
Is there a chance that, like, Stevenson comes on and then, well, no, I guess there'd be no reason to bring Hodgins back.
No, you have six.
Right.
They've gone with six each of the last 2 years. They have receivers on the practice squad.
Sure.
But Stevenson's going to probably have an IR designation going forward. Takes him out of the first 4 weeks in terms of the roster equation. If the injury is even longer than that, he'll just stay on IR. Mm-hmm. If for some reason he can come back late in the season, much like he did last year when he was first activated on Thanksgiving, that's how long it took for him, then that could be an option. And who knows? By then, you're 11 games into the season. Two of these guys might have injuries already that are in your top six.
Right, right.
So you may actually need him at that point in time. So it's kind of a weird blessing in disguise that Stevenson's not ready now, but you can kind of put him on IR, and when he's ready, maybe bring him off and activate him if you need him. Not to mention, if you get Hodgins on the practice squad, he's still a consideration. So, yeah, those were some of the initial takeaways for me on the 53-man roster that the Bills put together. And, you know, like we said, we're expecting people like Matt Barkley to be on the practice squad when all is said and done.
Right.
And so that's kind of where it's at. There were some interesting moves around the league besides the waiver claims, you know, that we listed that were former Bills. You know, it's interesting, too, because Nick McLeod, for the second time in 2 years, after being a cut by the Bills, was waiver claimed. Last year, it was the Cincinnati Bengals, spent about half the season there, then got released. Bills got him back. This year, it's Joe Shane, GM of the Giants, scooping him up and adding him to their 53-man roster. So that's where that kind of is. As for other NFL news and notes, O.J. Howard, who was cut yesterday by the Bills, is visiting with the Bengals today. He is expected to sign, provided everything goes well with his physical. They only have really Hayden Hurst at the top of the tight end depth chart in Cincinnati. Not a whole lot of experience behind him, so you could see why there might be an interest there. Sony Michel was one of the bigger name cuts, surprise cut by the Dolphins on Tuesday, and he is visiting the Los Angeles Chargers. So the Chargers might be looking for some veteran depth. They did draft Isaiah Spiller in the fourth round to back up Austin Eckler, and they have a former draft choice out of UCLA, Josh Kelly, who looks like he's going to be the number two running back behind Eckler. So Michel kind of looks like a bit of a luxury. This could just be a kicking of the tires in terms of the visit there. I don't know that the Chargers will definitively sign him, but we'll have to wait and see. We mentioned a couple of trades on the show yesterday that happened in the afternoon right before cuts were announced. There were a couple of more trades in the evening last night. The Steelers acquired offensive lineman Jesse Davis from the Vikings, spent earlier portions of his career with Miami, where he was a 5-year starter, mostly as a guard. So they add him for a conditional 7th-round pick in 2025. You have to believe that the conditions contained in the deal involve playing time for Jesse Davis. Like, if he comes in and he's a starter for us for so many games, we'll give you our 7th-round pick. They could become a 6th-round pick if he, you know, starts 12 games or whatever. It could be conditions like that. So the Steelers bolster their offensive line depth a little bit. The Cardinals, who are absolutely destitute at the cornerback position, acquired cornerback Trayvon Mullen from the Raiders, another high draft choice of the Raiders that goes by the board. Mullen was the 40th overall pick in 2019, and actually did okay for the Raiders in his first 3 seasons with them. Not great, but the word is that the Raiders are going to a man-heavy scheme defensively in terms of coverage, and that's not Trayvon Mullen's forte. So he's not a fit there, so he moves on to the Arizona Cardinals. And the Cardinals, let me see, what did they give up for him? I can't remember now. I want to see if I can see this. I don't see what they gave up, but I don't believe it was very much. I want to say it was a 7th or a conditional 6th. In any event, the Cardinals needed cornerback help. They feel they got it in acquiring cornerback Trayvon Mullen from the Raiders. We know the Raiders also waived offensive lineman Alex Leatherwood, the number 17 overall pick in last year's draft, Steve. Not good when he had to play right tackle for the Raiders last year. It was a struggle all the way. A lot of people projected him to guard when he was coming out. Why the Raiders felt they had to play him a tackle is a mystery to me. But he has been claimed by the Chicago Bears. So Leatherwood lands on another 53-man roster in Chicago. And then this was interesting, although it's probably just a roster quirk that'll get ironed out in the coming days. The Dallas Cowboys cut both of their backup quarterbacks yesterday. So they had just Dak Prescott as the only quarterback on their roster. They cut Cooper Rush and Will Greer. The word is Rush is expected to be added to their practice squad, but one QB on the 53-man roster. That's a little unique, to say the least.
It seems dangerous. But you got 2 weeks to do it, to get a guy acclimated, to get you out of a game. That's what you're talking about. But, yeah, if you look down what happened yesterday on, the 30th, Buccaneers and Colts made a trade. Texans and Vikings made a trade. Jaguars and Panthers made a trade. Raiders and Cardinals, as you said, Saints and Eagles. Broncos and the Vikings both traded with the Steelers, and the Panthers and Titans made a trade as well.
So here's the interesting thing, Steve. It's just been announced. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero is reporting the Cowboys are re-signing both Cooper Rush and Will Greer to their practice squad. So it looks like they're going to go into the regular season with only Prescott on the active roster. Now, we know that practice squad call-ups under the new practice squad rules are a lot easier now than they used to be, and you can elevate a guy twice in a season. But you're going to go into a game day with one quarterback?
You got to
pull one of those guys up each week.
One of those guys has to be pulled up, right?
You can't go into a game with one active quarterback.
You got to have somebody to finish, unless they say, well, if Dak goes down,
that's
got to
change.
Dak Prescott, I mean, I don't think there's any, I don't know. He's just so important to how that team goes. You know? I mean, seemed like, as every quarterback is. But man, oh man. I wonder what they're going to do. Because if they do it twice, that means they can do it for the first month of the season. They bring one guy up for 2 weeks, the other guy up for 2 weeks, they're done. Those guys can't be active anymore. Or maybe they're doing it just to leave the roster spots open so they can finagle elsewhere.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some roster gymnastics.
One of those guys is going to be an active quarterback coming up in a couple of days, right? I mean, that's what
similar
you're
thinking. Similar to the boat that the Bills are in with
a punter.
Marquez Stevenson and a punter and that kind of thing.
So I get that, but man, it makes a lot of sense because it gives you an idea of how valuable these roster spots are and how valuable these players are. And the angst that a coaching staff will give the GM of these teams, say, listen, we got to have this guy. He's out. We'll get him. We're going to cut this other guy and leave a spot open for him, and then we'll have him, and then, we'll do it. But these hoops that these GMs are jumping through by releasing guys that they know nobody will want in order to get a guy on their roster, or at least leave some space for a minute. It's interesting to see. There's no way the Cowboys go to the season with Dak Prescott as their only quarterback. But the way they got there, it's a little dangerous, don't you think? I mean, what if Jacksonville grabs one of their backup quarterbacks? You know?
I know.
What if, Seattle grabs both of them?
That would be funny.
Right? Because then you get caught. You're in trouble. You're in trouble. And certainly you don't go into any game anticipating that your starting quarterback, your franchise quarterback's going to go down. But man, oh man, if he does, you want to give yourself a chance to compete. And that's it. You expose these guys to waivers, and
it's a risk.
It's a risk.
There's no doubt. It's a risk.
As we've seen. There's some trades yesterday, and there's I had it up here a minute ago. There's maybe 30 names on this list of guys that got picked up. Maybe
there's 33 players.
33
that
players
got claimed this year.
So there's 33.
Seven
players.
Jets cuts got claimed that led the league.
How about that? So anyway, there's 30 guys around, and you always think about, well, six of them are going to be our guys. Well, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. And that does say something about the Jets. What do you think about the Jets having seven guys picked up?
I think it's an indication that there's more veteran talent on that Jets roster than people realize. I think people from afar view the Jets roster as this young team that's got to gain some experience. They added some under-the-radar veterans to their roster who are going to help that team win more games than I think people think. I think they could be a 7-win team this year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. A lot of it hinges on Zach Wilson, obviously. But, you add a safety like a Jordan Whitehead from Tampa, that guy's going to – you're going to drop him in the middle of your secondary, help some young corners. He's going to make a difference. That guy's going to make a difference. So – and then you think about all the vets they've added up front on their defensive front in the last couple of years. Carl Lawson is back.
Quinnen Williams is still there. Sheldon Rankins.
They got some players, man.
Vinny Curry.
They got veteran players.
Yeah. I've liked what they've started to do or what they tried to do with their offensive line, you know, the injuries notwithstanding. Elijah Vera Tucker can play. He's a good player as a guard.
That's a young draft choice.
Young draft. He's his second year. And Fant is still there. Dwayne Brown is a really good signing.
Yeah, they just picked him up. They had to because of the Mekhi Becton injury. He's out for the year.
Mekhi Becton is still a question mark, but at least he was an investment in the right spot for the Jets. And I think that's, you know what I'm saying? So, and like we said, I've been saying this all offseason, we felt like we missed a holiday because we really couldn't make fun of the Jets draft. You know?
Right.
It was always a fun day.
Yeah. Well, and Joe Douglas is a former offensive lineman, the GM. Right.
So this year,
he knows where to invest.
Right. This year, it's like, yeah, you know what? We have a pretty good draft by the Jets.
Yeah.
A little ways to go. I'm not, you know, none of us.
I think they could be a 6 or 7 win team.
Well, none of us are Zach Wilson fans. And I'd be interested to see if Joe Flacco can
still. He might have to play in the opener, Joe Flacco.
He is going to play in the opener, I heard. Yeah, at first couple of games maybe. And I think, you know, I don't even know if Joe can even lift his arm over his head, let alone.
Well, apparently he was lighting it up in the practice. Like they were running like a scrimmage type thing, like a green-white scrimmage in practice. You know, like full speed, contact, tackling, all of that. And Flacco was lighting up the defense.
Well, I'll say this.
To still throw the ball.
The guy could always sling it.
He can't move, but he can throw it.
He can't move, but he can sling it.
So if you protect Joe.
He could when he was young.
You could protect Joe. He can make some plays for you still, I think.
Yeah.
That's
I think it's really – it's intriguing because he's gonna show up and play well for those guys if they can protect him. He was a Super Bowl-winning quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And bet on himself that year and – did it. He's one of the few guys, you know, you see it all the time. I'm going to bet on myself. I think I'm play. So he plays his contract out with Baltimore and wins the Super Bowl as a starting quarterback. Yeah, and then he became the highest paid player in the league. And back then it was $25 million a year, $27 million mm-hmm. a year. He didn't see the end of the contract, but man, oh man, that's, you know, good for him. He's got something in the tank. I've always been high on Joe Flacco. But I haven't, you know, we haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Topic for discussion today, obviously, concerns the Bills' 53-man roster. What would you have done differently with the Bills' 53-man squad? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board, open line for you there, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. I'm sure there were people out there, Bills fans, who had their favorites, wanted to see a certain player on the roster, and they were not. What might you have done differently with the Bills' 53-man roster as it's currently constituted? Give us a call. Let us know if you think that they missed an opportunity to strengthen the roster in some area that you would have preferred to see, or maybe you just like it the way it is, and you know you're not terribly concerned with the last 4 or 5 spots on the roster. The Bills clearly were, and it's clear to me that they wanted them to have some measure of special teams prowess so that they can contribute to this football team. So that's kind of where it stands with that. Other things to discuss, Steve, for the first time since he resigned. So the first time since John Gruden resigned as head coach of the Raiders, he spoke publicly. He was at a booster club meeting for the Arkansas Razorbacks football team and was given the floor to kind of address the controversial, misogynistic, and homophobic emails that he had sent to Bruce Allen of the Washington organization. They were made public. He was kind of outed on that front, and understandably so, and then he promptly resigned from the Raiders, thereby canceling his 10-year, $100 million contract as their head coach. And he basically said he was ashamed of the emails that he wrote. He said, deep down, though, I believe I'm a good person. He said he goes to church. He's been married 31 years. He's got three kids that are, you know, model citizens, and he hopes he gets another chance. I mean, I guess that's the best. He didn't apologize. He said he was ashamed, called the comments that he made in those emails shameful. Didn't apologize. I can't remember if he did when he initially resigned. I want to say he did, but do you think he gets another shot in this day and age of the NFL? I don't know that he does.
Not as a head coach.
I don't think he does.
Not as a head coach. And certainly, now he could come back as a coordinator or something, like coach. And
he might be going the route of like a Greg Williams after the Bounty Gate thing.
Exactly. Greg Williams or Joe Vitt or one of those guys come back in another capacity with another team. But certainly the guy's he knows football. But, you know, you got to say, you kind of shrug your shoulders and say, okay, he owned it. You know, he didn't, and there's nothing else he could do. But coming out publicly and you know, kind of owning what happened and saying he was, you know, he didn't apologize, but he did when he resigned, I guess, and also said it was shameful and he was ashamed of it. So that's good on him. But, man, oh, man, it's going to be a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's not forget, I mean, he was gone for like a decade doing ESPN, mm-hmm. Monday Night Football, and then came back. How long is the sabbatical, the forced sabbatical this time? It's going to be like 3 or 4 years, I got to believe. I don't know. I think it's going to be a while before he's back.
It'll depend on how. I think too, it might depend on how badly he wants back. It might be if he could get, for instance, if a coach like McDaniel in Miami or Mike Tomlin were to say, "Listen, I want the guy on my," you know, somebody who's entrenched.
Yeah.
Say, come back here, and it could happen. It could happen. And certainly he's got something to offer an NFL team because of his depth and knowledge and his experience. But that's what it would take. A head coach who's entrenched, who has the ear of the owner, who say, listen, we can do this and it's going to work, and convincing him.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to call for you to let us know what you might have done differently with the Bills' 53-man roster. We'll take your thoughts on the phone lines and on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you in the aftermath of the 53-man roster construction, at least as it currently stands. It is likely subject to change, especially because the Bills do not yet have a punter on their 53-man roster. That will be addressed in short order, we anticipate. And we are asking you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, what would you change about the Bills' 53-man roster? Maybe something that you preferred to have happened that did not. So feel free to explain yourself at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Let's go to the phones, and leading us off here is Jay on a cell. Jay, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
I wanted to ask about Isaiah McKenzie and Jamison Crowder.
Okay.
What do you think about who starts there?
Well, McKenzie has been the primary slot guy from the jump in training camp, and that really hasn't changed. If you asked me to set up a pecking order, I would have Crowder as the fourth receiver on this roster.
Inside or outside?
Inside or outside.
If Davis or Diggs or McKenzie go down,
he's Crowder's the next guy on the field.
That's what I think, too.
The question is, does the slot receiver position, is that going to be a spot that's manned by just one guy in Isaiah McKenzie, or is it going to be a shared role? I think that's largely going to depend on Isaiah McKenzie's health, first and foremost. I think he's going to be given every opportunity to get the bulk of the work there. But let's not forget, it's a 17-game season. He's diminutive in stature, and Jamison Crowder is a proven player, with all but one of his seven NFL seasons resulting in 50 receptions or more. So I think Crowder will be a factor He could siphon away some work from Isaiah McKenzie as a result, but I think McKenzie will get first crack at it to start the season. That's kind of where it sits.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any different.
You got and before we move on, there's a report out there now that and maybe you mentioned that Sam Martin is in town visiting with the Bills.
Okay.
It's being reported by some people out there that the punter for the Denver Broncos, who was top five and was released because he refused to take a pay cut from the Broncos, was released by the Broncos, is now visiting the Buffalo Bills. So we'll see. Sam Martin, formerly of the Denver Broncos, it's being reported, is in Buffalo.
All right.
So we'll see. Not signed with Buffalo, but just
visiting.
Checking it out.
Yeah. They'll probably have to, you know, if he is here for a free agent visit, he would be put through a physical and everything like that. So, yeah.
Martin was making 2.7 from the Broncos, and they wanted him to, like, chop that in half about. But he wouldn't do it. So we'll see. I'm going to see what the Bills are going to do.
Yeah. Wait. Well, we know they need to fill the position. So that's pretty much where it stands. For those that don't know Sam Martin's history, former fifth-round pick of the Detroit Lions in the 2013 draft, Appalachian State product, Steve.
There you go.
It's a Mountaineer. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to John in Buffalo next. What do you got for us, John? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. I just wonder what you guys thought about O.J. Howard during the preseason, and if you were surprised that he didn't make the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I would say O.J. was okay. And I think what was working against him was he really wasn't a factor on any of the special teams units. So if that's going to be the case, you better stand out and separate yourself from the other tight ends on the roster when you're on offense. And yes, he did have the one touchdown catch in the second preseason game against the Broncos. So he flashed there. But I got to be honest with you, John, there just weren't enough flashes for me.
Right.
I mean, I feel bad. Injuries kind of curtailed his career, Steve, in the early going. I'm not trying to be mean here. He was just kind of ordinary.
Yeah, he was just a guy in the training camp with Buffalo. And if you're not going to contribute in any other way other than the tight end, and you're going to start, and he was certainly not going to start over Dawson Knox, that's it. I mean, he just didn't stand out enough. And when you've got two young guys like, you know, Quentin Morris, who flashed and grabbed some attention, made some great catches during camp.
And improved his blocking tremendously from last year.
And was working hard at it. And then you got Tommy Sweeney, who's, I don't want to say, I don't think Sweeney's entrenched. I don't think they're married to Tommy Sweeney, but the guy's got a great attitude and he flashed during training camp. He had some days where he was the star of the offense. Making some diving catches and all of that stuff, as was Quentin Morris. So, and O.J. Howard never did that. And, in fact, there were days when he missed some catches where you think, well, you know, you got to catch that. And that's it. I mean, I was surprised at how unsurprising he was.
He was unspectacular.
Yeah.
And with the opportunity he had here, when you think about who he was stuck playing behind in Tampa Bay, namely Gronk and Cameron Brait, who's been a pretty effective tight end in this league out of Harvard, been a productive player. He was buried on a depth chart there. He comes here, and he had an opportunity to be the number two tight end behind Dawson Knox on offense. He just had to show out and separate himself from Sweeney and Morris on the offensive side of the ball, and he was set, and he could not do it. He just could not do it, did not make enough plays. And, you know, it's like Coach McDermott says all the time, you've got to earn it. And with what Tommy Sweeney and Quentin Morris also offer you on special teams, it clearly tipped the scales in their favor.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were, quite frankly, disappointed in what O.J. Howard ultimately brought to the table. And I think his release reflects that. He could be back here on the practice squad, too. He knows the offense, and he's a good tight. He's a solid guy, but I don't know what his. I don't think his. I think his upside has been seen, and we saw it in training camp, and it was on. You know, I mean, that's why, you know, Tom Brady goes to Tampa Bay. He's got O.J. Howard in the stable, and the first thing he does say, you know what? We need Gronk. I mean, you could see it down there. They were like, yeah, you know what? The players are telling him, say, listen, we need an upgrade at tight end, and that's O.J. Howard when he was there. So, you know, he took a flyer on him, see if he could do it, but the young guys just outperformed him. They just outperformed him.
Yeah. And that's kind of where things sit. And the tight end position will go with three players. Reggie Gilliam is kind of your crossover fourth, I suppose, if you need him in a pinch. The fullback, primarily fullback, but he could cross over there at a moment's notice. So, yeah, I mean, you could look at a bunch of different areas on this roster and kind of look at them and say, okay, I can see why they did that. I guess O.J. Howard is the closest thing to a surprise. There's name recognition there, and so maybe a casual fan might be like, oh, they cut that guy? Beyond him, though, I don't think there were any, like, knock-you-over shockers. You know what I mean?
No, where you get down to it, is it going to be five or four defensive backs or defensive ends? Is it, you know, where is it? Who's it going to be? The final 53-man roster for Buffalo has got 10 defensive backs, 9 defensive linemen, 9 offensive linemen, 6 linebackers, 6 receivers, and, you know, the specialists and the quarterback. So it was not really surprising from those numbers, except that you're getting more defensive backs, more linemen these days than you are linebackers, which, you know, you used to have a ton of those guys. You're playing 3 of them every game, every snap, and sometimes 4 of them if you're running a 3-4, mm-hmm. and you got to back up all of those guys. So then there were like 10 linebackers and only 6 D linemen, you know. And it just flips it when you're running the 4-3. But, yeah, that's no real surprises. And like I said, we tend to think about most of these guys in the preseason and then never give them a second thought during the regular season because they're playing special teams or on their backups. Mm-hmm. But they're the guys that you think, is he going to make it or is he not going to make it? And that's the most interesting thing about the team in the preseason.
Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your thoughts at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What would you have done differently with the Bills 53-man roster? You can let us know there, open line for you, or on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. We're back with more in a sec. Stay tuned. Buffalo Wing Festival is back at Highmark Stadium over Labor Day weekend. Over 75 different styles of wings from 24 eateries, local and from across the country, plus 3 stages with live music and contests. There's something for the whole family. Tickets will be sold at the gate for $20. Parking's free. Kids under 8 get in for free. Learn more by visiting buffalowing.com. Nothing beats competitive eating contest. Gluttony at its best. Enjoy that if you're going to the Buffalo Wing Festival this weekend.
Yeah, the weather's
been here at Highmark Stadium. It's an event to be said for sure. We want to get back to the phones as we are discussing today what you would have done with the Bills' 53-man roster that may be different from what you saw when it all crossed yesterday at about 4:30 in the afternoon. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We go back to the phones, and Nate in Varysburg leads us off. What do you got, Nate?
Hey, guys. Hey, it doesn't have to do with the question you're asking, but I'm wondering if you guys know how Kim McGlue is doing, and also, too, how much the guys on the practice squad make. I don't know if you guys know that, but I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, so practice squad, the guys make $11.5 a week. The veterans make more. I want to say it starts at $15,400 a week if there's a veteran on the practice squad, and I believe it can go up to almost $20,000 a week.
Yeah, it can go up to $19,500 a week.
So it's a pretty good living, especially when you're not getting the tar beat out of you on Sundays.
Right.
You're just practicing.
What was his other question?
I think he was asking about Kim Pegula, and we have no updates.
Oh, yeah, no updates.
On Kim.
Yeah. What are you going to?
Ownership's chosen to keep it a private matter, and we're going to respect that. So that's kind of where it stands.
We wish you our best, and
absolutely,
hopefully we'll hear good things.
Back to the phones, though, and to Joe in Buffalo next. What do you got for us, Joe?
Good afternoon. Just a different take on your question. I've been reflecting on a couple of the washouts we've had under Bean's watch. A couple of years ago, he signed Corey Coleman, who I think never saw the field. He had a $3 million guaranteed contract. We took a hit on that. We've now taken a hit on O.J. Howard, Ford, the cut of Wyatt Teller. I'm just wondering if you guys think the Bills front office needs to take a deeper look at its scouting and its players that they're drafting. They've done great jobs, obviously, signed Josh as opposed to Josh Rosen. But these are high draft choices that just never panned out, or free agents that just never panned out. And, you know, $6 million of cap hits, a lot of cap hits for two people who never saw the field other than in the preseason.
Yeah, if you
think, get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Joe, you're right. And believe me, they do take it seriously. And every time they miss, they go back and try and what they thought they saw. What they thought they saw in those guys and what they actually got out of those guys and how to find that out before the fact. They self-scout and self-analyze what they went through. And, you know, they do that a lot. In fact, that's their job. So, and part of their job is what they do. Certainly, and I go back to thinking of Wyatt Teller, and I haven't gone back and done this, but it seems to me, and you're right, there's a lot of people in this building that still roll their eyes and go, gosh, what happened with Wyatt Teller? And I'm not sure, but I thought Wyatt Teller was traded while Eric Wood was still on the team. And if that's the case...
Well, and John Miller was still on the team.
And so was Richie Incognito. And then, within the span of 8 weeks, you lost Eric Wood and Richie Incognito after they had just put together two Pro Bowl seasons there, and Wyatt couldn't get on the field here. So you're thinking, well, you know, now's the time where Wyatt's got some value. So, yeah, then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the team lost those two players, Eric Wood to an injury and Richie Incognito to emotional instability. All of a sudden, they got caught, and they suffered for that a lot. Not only did they lose Wyatt Teller, but they lost the other two guys, and they didn't get anything in return. They got something for Teller, but they didn't get anything for Eric Wood and Richie Incognito, and that hurt them throughout that next year.
2018, yeah.
2018 is the only year of the Sean McDermott era they didn't go to the playoffs. And I would put it right at the feet of that, the fact that they lost Eric Wood and Richie. And of course, then before that, when they didn't need him, couldn't get him on the field, Wyatt Teller. So that stung a lot. Now, the $3 million hit here and the $2 million hit here, I think we're getting another... 2.4 for O.J. Howard.
It's a 2.62 hit on O.J. Howard this year. It's another $600K next year. So all told, yes, it's $3.2 million. And it's not anything to sneeze at. But Corey Coleman, just to kind of lay this out properly, it was only a $1.3 million hit because he got picked up by the Patriots after the Bills released him. Then he got signed by the Giants after that. And so the Bills were only on the hook for the difference in contract. They had to pay the difference, which was $1.3 million. So it was not a $3 million hit. It was a $1.3 million hit. And, you know, I think Brandon Bean would be the first person to tell you he's not perfect. Nobody that's a GM in this league is, because the art of acquiring NFL talent and identifying it and believing and projecting in what it could be going forward is very much an inexact science. The batting average that Brandon Bean has is going to keep him employed as a general manager in this league for a very long time.
I'll say this. That's the first part of that was all we said about the Wyatt Teller and losing those guys back then and the hit that they took. But I'll say this. The other part of the answer to your question, Joe, is this. Compare Brandon and their track record to other GMs around the league. Compare them to those other guys and see how they're doing. The Bills are hitting it a lot more than other people are. And they're getting it right deeper into the draft. This draft in particular, and if you want to see how they're getting better, look at this draft in particular. It was really, really good, with the exception, of course, the punter that turned into this monstrosity. But the talent level in this draft class for the Buffalo Bills will give you an idea of, you know, of why Brandon Bean is who he is and why this club's not, he's not going anywhere for a while. Certainly they've missed on some things, but that's part of doing business too. It's the cost of doing business. And compare his track record to some of the other guys in the business, and you'll see why he's here.
There is news concerning the free agent visit of Sony Michel to the Chargers. It looks like the Chargers are, in fact, going to sign Sony Michel, who was cut by the Dolphins yesterday. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Greg Cosell, senior producer of NFL Films and the co-host of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN. He joins us next to put a bow on the Bills preseason and the outlook for the regular season next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Hour number two, and time for us to be joined by NFL film senior producer and co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show. It is our good friend Greg Cosell joining us as we put a bow on the preseason. Thank God for that, right, Greg? And we get ready for the NFL regular season.
I'm right there with you, Chris. I was so excited when the preseason ended. Boy, I probably shouldn't say that out loud.
Well, it means the regular season's coming up, too. I mean, we got a lot to look forward to this year, particularly here in Buffalo. I mean, yeah. So
Sure. I mean, an opening on the first Thursday night, I mean, that's big. Unfortunately, it's on the West Coast and not in your fair city, but hey, it's still Thursday night football. It's the only game in town that night.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us, if you've had a chance to peruse it, what were your initial thoughts about some of the decisions that the Bills made in getting the roster to 53? There's probably still going to be some tinkering, knowing they still need a punter. But what did you think at first blush?
Well, I guess the only guy that really surprised me, and again, I'm not there every day, so I'm just speaking from a distance, obviously, was O.J. Howard, because obviously they kept Sweeney and Morris, and I know you guys told me that Morris had shown very well on a day-to-day basis in camp, which obviously I wouldn't know about. But, you know, as we discussed last week, Howard had some really strong blocks in the run game, but maybe they feel Sweeney can fill that same role. So, yeah, that was the only thing that surprised me. Is there anything else you know about that, you know, was sort of not out there? Because, you know, Howard obviously was a pretty high first round pick. It hasn't quite worked out for him in the league. I don't know if anybody grabbed him or
Cincinnati did. Yeah, Cincinnati actually claimed him. I guess they didn't have too much behind Hayden Hurst.
Right.
I would say if there was anything on Howard, it just wasn't. There wasn't day-to-day consistency there. He would flash. There'd be a play here or there. And I think they were expecting a lot more from him with the opportunity that sat in front of him to be the number two tight end behind Dawson Knox. And he just didn't go out there and grab it. He didn't really separate significantly enough, as I saw it, separate himself from Morris and Sweeney.
You could have told people watching practice that he was – an undrafted rookie free agent, and if he would have gotten the reps that he got, they wouldn't have been surprised at the way he played.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. So that's obviously because I'm not there. Yeah, I mean, the other one that didn't surprise me, and I know we discussed this, Chris, was Kumerow, because he's a great special teams player, as you guys have, you know, told me numerous times. And, you know, that's important to teams. You know, the last thing you want to do when you have a really good team on both sides of the ball, and the Bills fall into that category without question, is to lose games because of special teams. You know, we're talking here to Steve, obviously. Steve, you know that better than I do for sure. But the Bills, you know, they're very, very good on both sides of the ball, and you just don't want to lose a game because your special team falls apart.
So you mentioned, you know, how they went with the numbers there for special teams as a focus. They also went heavy at defensive back, 10,
yep,
not counting Tre'Davious White. And we know that Tre'Davious White is now going to miss the first four games, going on reserve PUP. What are your thoughts about Buffalo's secondary against that Rams receiving core that now includes Allen Robinson, knowing there's a strong likelihood that Kyir Elam is going to be starting at one of the outside corner positions?
Yeah, and I think he will. I mean, when you look at the roster spots, I mean, he's likely to be a starter. You know, all I have is the game. So, I mean, obviously Elam was going to make the team, and he played very well, by the way, in the game. So there was no concern there. But just watching the games, I really thought that Bedford had to be there as well. And you know, you were there. You know more about the practice on a day-to-day than I do. But I thought watching the games, Bedford really showed well. Mm-hmm. And even though he was a sixth-round pick out of a smaller school, I thought that, you know, the game showed that he could play in this league and that he belonged. So I don't know if he was the last guy. I don't know how they saw all that. You know, I think Cam Lewis is an important player too, and I don't know how many, you know, reps he gets, but we saw that he could play both outside in the slot and safety, and those kinds of players are really important to have because versatility in your secondary in today's NFL, with the emphasis on three wide, some teams with four wide, that's really, really important.
Do you anticipate the Bills rolling out against the LA Rams much the same as they have the last 3 years? Two backers, five DBs, four defensive linemen, and then, you know, and teams have really tried to pry them out of that personnel and haven't been able to do it. What do you think, if the Rams wanted to do that, what would they do?
Well, the Rams historically under McVay now,
11, yeah.
They've been 11 personnel. Right. Last year, I believe they led the league in 11 personnel, over 82%, if memory serves me correctly. I'm not staring at the number.
I think it was the last two years, Greg, that they've led the league in 11 personnel.
I think you're right, Brownie. So, you know, I'd be surprised, quite honestly, if McVay took a defensive approach to offense. And by that, I mean, say, well, right, we want to get the Bills out of there, what they like to do. I would think he would say, particularly with the corner situation with the Bills, which is still an unknown as the regular season begins, no matter how much I or they might like Elam, it's, you know, Dane Jackson's likely to be the other corner, I would assume. So they're going to say, you're going to have to cover us. I mean, we're not going to make you get out of what you want to do. You're going to have to cover us because we've got good wideouts and you're going to have to cover us. So right. I don't think they're going to do anything differently. The Bills, that is, from a personnel standpoint.
I don't know how much was revealed in the preseason as far as the Bills' intentions in the run game. But Aaron Cromer, as you know, is here now as the offensive line coach.
Yep.
They seem to have – I was talking to Eric Wood about this, who does color commentary on our radio network here, and he kind of labeled it a mid-zone kind of run game.
Yeah.
It's not really outside. It's not always inside. It's more of a mid-zone kind of run game. And he said in talking to Aaron Cromer, who actually coached him the first time Cromer was here as a line coach a few years back under Rex Ryan, he said that Cromer is very excited – about the mobility level of every guy on his offensive line this year, which I don't know if that could have been said last year about the Bills line with players like Feliciano and Darrell Williams, who are not as mobile as maybe, say, a Roger Saffold, and a Spencer Brown, even a Dan or David Quessenberry. So what could change there in terms of their approach in the run game, knowing that and maybe some of Cromer's history?
Yeah, well, I know Aaron, and he's one of the best in the league. And I think that in some ways, and this term, people might take it the wrong way, but I think he's really good at simplifying things for the offensive linemen so they're really clear and precise in what they're doing. And so the big question you're asking, and there's no way to know the answer to this, is will they run the ball with a higher percentage? Different people, as you guys know, all have different points of view on that. We know they're not going to take the ball out of Josh Allen's hands in any meaningful way. But the question becomes, do you feel you want a more physical dimension to your offense? And there's something to be said for that. I mean, there's a lot of people who are believers in the pass game who also believe that your offense needs a physical dimension, which the run game provides. Plus, the run game is the element of your offense that tends to provide stability and continuity if you're not having a great day. You know, if for whatever reason you get off to a bad start, most teams stabilize their offense with the run game, not by tossing it all over the yard. So I think we also mentioned a week ago that Saffold, to me, was a great pickup in that regard because he is an outstanding zone run blocker. And I think that's a really significant upgrade.
One of the things we've spoken about the last couple of weeks is the emergence of James Cook. And
yeah,
you said about running the ball physically. I get it. And to have a guy on the field with James Cook's skill set, I think it comes down to that certainly he can split out and he can run at the slot position, maybe wide receiver, split and move him around all over the formation. How effective could he be as a guy who could do both of those things, though? If he
yeah.
could, certainly he can line up and catch the ball. We've seen that, and we're excited to see it. But can he be a guy that also forces the defense to think, okay, well, we're going to match up with him as a receiver, and then can he line up and be a physical running back?
Well, first of all, hey, Brownie, I'm still waiting for my check from Brandon Bean for saying that that's who they should have drafted in the second round last year, you know?
So are we. We're waiting for our check.
We were saying
we
similar
the same
things.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
No merit bonus for us.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, you know, to me, Cook is a totally complete back. He's a terrific runner, Steve. He's just not 215 pounds. But, you know, if you can, you choose to run him, I guess the point I'm making is when he's in the lineup, that doesn't mean you have to throw the football. You can line him up as an I back. You can line him up as an offset back in the shotgun, and he can carry the football. And he's an outstanding runner. He's just not big. He's not as big as his brother Dalvin, but he looks like him when he runs. And there is some power and velocity to him given his size. He's not just a scat back. So I think that, you know, Cook is a really big addition to this offense. And then you do get into the pass game element. He's an outstanding receiver, both out of the backfield and detached from the formation. And he can run vertical routes. So I think you're going to see that in this offense. You know, it's preseason. Nobody's played a regular season game. So you don't know. It becomes speculation as to exactly how and how often. But there's no question James Cook can do all that.
And then I know we discussed this with you last week. We were all curious as to the breakdown of the defensive linemen that the Bills would carry, whether it would be five defensive ends and four DTs or four defensive ends and five DTs. They ultimately go with five pass rushers and only four interior defenders, Shaq Lawson probably being that fifth and final end as he's back on the roster now after a two-year hiatus in Miami and Houston. So does that say anything to you that they kept the extra pass rusher and not the extra interior defender? They went heavier at end than DT.
Yeah, but I think they have two guys who can line up inside and bash them at Epinesa if need be, depending on situational football. So I think that those two guys give them that versatility, Brownie, that you know, can happen in any given game. It may not be a weekly thing. It may be the nature of the opponent, the nature of how they want to line up in a given week. But I think those two guys can go inside. I mean, quite honestly, to me, although I don't remember them doing it, maybe you can remember, but if they did, it was hardly at all. But I even think Rousseau could line up in there if you really felt like you wanted him to do that. But as we know, he did that in college at the U. So, no, so I mean, it's a really good D-line group. I mean, this is, they have a ton of quality depth. If you look at Oliver and Jones and say they're the starting D tackles, and then you talk about Phillips and Settle, those two guys could start on a lot of teams, and you'd be totally happy if they were your starting D tackles.
What do you think what's it going to look like? I mean, if they rotate those guys in, they get a high level of production. This is a number one defense from a year ago, although we've said it a ton, they weren't a big play defense. They weren't turnovers and sack. They got them, but they weren't timely sacks. They weren't timely turnovers. They got them when they kind of got it given to them. They didn't really dominate games, but they were tough statistically to make hay against. How could that be different this year with all these guys up front?
I guess that the big question to me comes down to, you know, blitz percentage. And will they blitz more? Last year, they were sort of in the middle of the league in blitz percentage, you know, versus quarterback dropbacks. That's how we talk about blitz. You know, you don't talk about it during, you know, the run game. So they blitzed, you know, probably a quarter of quarterback dropbacks. So the question is, will they do more of that, or are they really comfortable with where they're at? You know, obviously they have Von Miller. They may feel, and they have Rousseau now in his second year. Will they feel that, hey, we can get the pass rush that we want with four down linemen? Because look, in an ideal world, every team would like to get there with four and have seven in coverage because it's a numbers game. You know, the bottom line is, though, if you can't get there with four and the quarterback's secure and comfortable in the pocket, then you've got to rush five because you've got to speed up the quarterback. I mean, if you don't speed up the quarterback, it's hard to play defense no matter how good your secondary may be. So, that's a tough question to answer. But my inclination sitting here a week before the season starts is they would start off trying to rush with four, be very selective in their five-man pressures, but really be a four-man pass rush D-line, feeling that Miller and Rousseau are really good off the edge and that they have inside people that can push the pocket.
Last one I've got for you, Greg, is I know you like Khalil Shakir a lot coming out to begin with.
I do.
It looks like he is receiver number five in the pecking order behind the top three, Davis, Diggs, and McKenzie, and then Crowder looks to be the first receiver on the field for any one of those three, which then makes Shakir by default the number five, although it does look like he's going to return punts as well. What do you think is realistic for him, knowing where he sits in that pecking order in terms of production on offense?
Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah, I'm not surprised as much as I like him because all the other guys are veterans. You know, Crowder, when healthy, has been a solid slot in this league. I think Shakir has the flexibility to play both inside and outside. I don't think he's solely a slot. So I guess we'll have to see how the season plays out. I think he could get some snaps. You know, he's certainly not going to beat out Diggs or Davis, but you know, with receivers, you never know. You know, sometimes guys are used in certain packages that a coaching staff likes. So we'll see. But I'm not surprised he made the team. I think that he's a really quality receiver with a refined feel for a young player. And it's very possible he could get snaps.
Last one from me, Greg. You've watched a lot of preseason film, I take it. Has there been a team or a player or a staff or something about this preseason that has been a surprise for you that you can talk about?
Well, I probably haven't watched as much as you think, Steve.
I know.
I watched some, but I'm trying to think. You know, I was very, very interested in the Pittsburgh quarterback situation because I really liked Kenny Pickett coming out of Pitt, and I thought he was the best quarterback prospect in the draft. And
he played well.
The preseason kind of played out that way. And, my guess is Trubisky will be named the starter because he certainly did not have a bad preseason. But I think Pickett will be a quality NFL starter whenever he gets that opportunity. You know, quite frankly, I was also impressed with Desmond Ridder in Atlanta. Now, I don't think he'll be the starter either to start week one, but I think what he showed to me followed what I saw at Cincinnati, because I felt watching him at the University of Cincinnati that over time he could be a quality NFL starting quarterback. And there was nothing in the preseason watching the games anyway that led me to believe otherwise.
Interesting guys to keep an eye on going forward for sure. Greg, thanks as always. We look forward to catching up with you next week
when it's
regular season week one. Hooray.
Then we'll get into the Rams in detail.
That's right.
Awesome.
We look forward to it. Thanks Greg.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's senior producer NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us. And he'll be with us all season long, prepping us for each and every one of the Bills' upcoming matchups in that respective week. So good to have Greg back for another season. Nobody crunches film like that guy. He's probably got an illness in that area, to be quite honest with you.
We're here to exploit it.
We are here to exploit it. It's not healthy for him, but it's great for us. And that... better for the show, and better for you, the listeners, because he's really an informed source on what to expect from future opponents, so we look forward to those conversations coming up this season. We should get back to the phones, though, as we have been asking you all day today, what might you have done differently with Buffalo's 53-man roster after getting a chance to peruse what it looks like
in its first iteration. So back to the phones we go, and waiting patiently there is Brian on a cell. What do you got for us, Brian? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, I just have a random question for you.
Sure.
I'm just wondering why the Bills are on Monday night at 7:15, and there's another game at 8:30, the Eagles.
Yeah.
Isn't that lesser, the Monday night game for a home opener?
Yeah, they've done it the last couple of years. They have a doubleheader on the first week of the season, or the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Buy them, like one at 7 and one at 10?
They usually stagger the start times. That's correct.
Right. That's right.
So doesn't that luster our home opener for the 7:15 game?
Does it lose luster because it's at 7:15 instead of 8:30?
Correct. On top of that, there's the 8:30 game is right on top of our game.
Yeah, you're saying there'll be overlap there. I get what you're saying. I don't anticipate that. I think it's a good draw for a game because you've got last year's number one AFC playoff seed in Tennessee, with a marquee player in Derrick Henry. And then, you got Josh Allen and the Bills. And I'm telling you right now, this place is going to be in a froth on Monday night in week two.
Right.
It is going to be
It's the Chargers
bonkers.
Chiefs. Yeah, it's a Chargers Chiefs game in Kansas
Which is
City,
a good game.
Which is it's a great game. No, that's the Thursday game. The Monday game is Vikings-Eagles. So the thing they do with that is because it's an NFC East team and you get the Philly market, that's what's doing it. I agree.
That's why they're staggering it because it's an East Coast team.
The thing about the Bills, for Bills fans, Tennessee's a big game, not only because it's the home opener, it's a Monday night game and all that, but for other markets, if you're an NFC market, nobody cares about the Titans-Bills. They don't know that the Bills have played the Titans the last 3 years or 4 years or 5 years in a row. And it's been, the Bills beat them a couple of times. Now the Tennessee Titans have beaten the Bills a couple of times. Most places aren't into that rivalry as much as Bills fans are. So it's the same thing with this Eagles-Vikings. They're out of division opponents. They don't play each other that often. And quite frankly, unless you're part of those two fan bases, it's not that big a deal for most people. Just like the Bills-Titans game is not a big deal outside of Tennessee and Buffalo, except for the fact that the Bills are the Super Bowl favorite, and they got Josh. So it's interesting to me that those are the games they chose to doublehead that night. Because if you're picking matchups,
you're watching Josh Allen before you're watching.
I mean, think about it. The Sunday night game that week is the Bears-Packers, the oldest rivalry in the league, right? But you got Bengals-Cowboys, the 4:25 game.
But I think I wonder if the network staggered it tighter because all four teams are either in the Eastern or Central time zones. You're not going to start a kickoff on a Monday night for a game in Philly and a game in Buffalo at 10 o'clock. You're just not doing that. Why they didn't put a West Coast team in the second time slot, I don't know. Traditionally, they have done it that way. They didn't this time, and that's probably why the two start times are only about an hour and 15 minutes apart.
I mean, you look
because you're going to lose audience.
It's a weak schedule
if it's too late
for the entire weekend. The only good matchup, Seattle, normally the Seahawks 49ers game, okay, pretty good. The Patriots Steelers is actually one of the better matchups of the thing. The Saints Buccaneers is a good matchup. But Brownie's right. There's a lot that goes into these things, and I couldn't tell you the formula they have for who they pick for the 7 o'clock game and who is the 8:30 or 8:15 game. But they have their reasons, particularly in this early weekend of the season. You're looking around, it's Falcons-Rams, Panthers-Giants, it's Texans-Broncos.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot else to pick from
Colts,
in terms of week two
Colts,
inventory.
Jaguars. How about this one? Lions, Commanders.
Woof.
Woof. Jets, Browns without Deshaun.
Ooh.
I mean.
And maybe without Zach Wilson.
Right? It's like just.
The backup
bowl. You know what?
Brissett versus Flacco.
Let me just tell you something. It's so good. You're going to, because looking forward to the Bills game on Monday night against the
Tennessee. Nobody's going to watch anything else.
You're going to be so glad you have that to look for, because that week two weekend of games is putrid.
Woo!
Putrid. Chiefs, Chargers, that's a pretty good game. Starts on Thursday night. Then you've got.
And you go downhill.
Dolphins,
fast.
Ravens, Jets, Browns, Commanders, Lions, Bucks, Saints. Pretty good matchup.
Yeah.
Colts, Jaguars, Panthers, Giants.
Yeesh.
Steelers, rebuilding, Patriots, dumpster fire, Seahawks, first pick of the draft 2023.
Oh, you've already got it. Go. Is Niner, that on the whiteboard yet?
Niners. Falcons, Rams. The Rams are going to beat the Falcons 200-0. Now, here's a good one. Bengals, Cowboys. I'd watch that. Texans, Broncos. No.
They could have put Bengals, Cowboys on the second Monday
yes.
night game.
Or Bears, Packers.
But
that
still, you're
kind
doing
of
Central Time Zone. I mean, you're not starting a Central Time Zone game at 9 p.m.
So,
well, I guess you could.
Yeah, you start with those putrid matchups, at least from this one. Now, they may get, I don't know how they're going to do it in 1 week. After week opening day, but they're it's a horrible weekend of games.
Yeah, it's not a lot to choose.
Bills Titans are actually pretty good. Number one seed from a year ago versus the Super Bowl favorite of this year.
Yeah.
Now the second game, Vikings Eagles.
It's all right.
Yeah,
Eagles made the playoffs. Vikings new coaching staff. You know.
Yeah. But see, they got and the only other one's the Bears Packers, and that's the Bears are. They're on fire, too. They're
right. We got to take a break here, but we'll get to more of your phone calls when we return. What would you have done differently with the Bills' 53-man roster? Is there something that stuck out that you said, oh, why didn't they keep that guy? I wanted him. Let us know. 803-0550 or hit us up on the tweet sheet. We're back with more in a second here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Wednesday. And we want to get right back to the phones for your thoughts on the Bills' 53-man roster. And we go next to Robert in Amherst. What do you got for us, Robert? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi. I think I agree with most of what they did. There's just the receivers. I had a slightly different order in the way they were putting the receivers.
Okay.
My 1, 2, 3, and 4 are probably the same ones everybody else has. Stephon Diggs is 1. Gabriel Davis is 2. Isaiah McKenzie is 3. And Khalil Shakir, I move him up to 4 because I think he did very well in the preseason. But I would have kept Isaiah Hodgins as 5 because he adds a height dimension, and I think he can block on an outside run. And I thought he had some really good catches on some really badly thrown balls by the backup quarterback. And number 6, Jay Kumerow, because he does special teams. And I would have probably not included Jamison Crowder or Marquez Stevenson because I think what they do is covered by other receivers.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, Robert. I think in a year, though, when you were going for the whole enchilada, you want as much of a veteran presence on your roster as possible. That's where Jamison Crowder fits in, and the way the Bills saw it, based on receiver usage, Crowder is their number 4, Shakir is their number 5, and then Kumerow is their 6 as the chief special teamer. I think what worked against Hodgins, Robert, chiefly, more than anything else, was his lack of experience on special teams. That hurt him. He tried to improve in that area, to his credit, but I don't think he's there yet. So knowing that Kumerow has the experience and the production edge in the special teams phase of the game and is a pretty good blocker in the run game as a receiver himself, arguably second only to Gabe Davis, that's how Hodgins found himself on the outside looking in.
Don't forget, you didn't see Crowder in the preseason. He had a hamstring pull in camp and all that, but here's what – why he's here. The coaches absolutely positively feel like they know who Jamison Crowder is. They've seen him play against their defense for the Jets for a couple of years. They watched him for 4 years in Washington. They know him. He didn't even They didn't need to see him play to know what kind of receiver and what he could bring to the table. All these other guys got this, got their chances basically to play better and to do more than they already knew Jamison Crowder could do. So you saw those guys flash. You saw them have good plays, bad plays, have this preseason that they did. They were all going up against a standard that was Isaiah McKenzie, Jamison Crowder, and then subsequently Khalil Shakir played well enough to get in that group as well. But don't forget, Crowder's not competing against Khalil Shakir or Isaiah McKenzie or Jake Kumerow or Isaiah Hodgins. They were trying to prove they were as good as Crowder's already proven he is to the Bills coaching staff. They tried to get Crowder 3 years ago when he went to the Jets. So the veterans on the squad who didn't take like any reps or just a few reps during the preseason in games, that's because the coaching staff knows who those guys are. So all the great things you saw these young players do in the preseason, it was very nice. But they've seen Jamison Crowder, Isaiah McKenzie, Diggs, and Davis do that against NFL players for years. So don't forget, that's what that's kind of the atmosphere these rookies walk into, particularly with a guy like Crowder coming in from another team that, you know, the Bills have played for 4 years. So
Yeah. That's
kind of a different mindset maybe for those guys than what you're thinking of.
I would say so. And Hodgins, in all likelihood, as we mentioned at the top of the show, he was not claimed by any other team. So he's available for the practice squad anyway.
Yeah, so whatever you think you see there, other teams didn't see that in the preseason. And that includes a Giants team.
That knows him pretty well.
That knows him really well.
So
now, the Giants team weren't in this training camp and didn't see the improvement in Hodgins that the Bills staff has attested to, but they did see him play and it wasn't good enough for them.
Yeah. We have to go to another phone call here. Let's go to Frank in Williamsville next. Frank, you're on One Bills Live. What do you have for us?
Well, this kind of piggybacks off of what Steve just said, and it might be different for every player in different situations, but as far as the evaluation of the players, what's the priority? Is it the practice they go through on a day-to-day basis? Is it preseason games? Does contract stuff play into a situation, like a draft position of the player? And I just wanted to ask as well, before I go, hang up, where's AJ Klein these days? Is he still around in the NFL? No.
I don't believe he's on an NFL roster right now. I will double-check that for you to make sure. I am not certain of that, but I am pretty sure of that.
I'll say this. I saw AJ Klein in Carolina. He came over to the Bills hotel last Thursday to say hi to some of the guys he played with for the last couple of years.
So I would assume no is the answer on that. I can double check that for you and try to get an answer in the last segment of the show. As for what carries the day in whether a player makes the roster or not, priority number one here under Sean McDermott is day-to-day consistency. He wants to know, and the coaching staff wants to know, and be convinced of the fact that the guy they get and the effort they get from that guy and the consistency of effort they get from that guy on day two of training camp is going to be the same guy in week 16 on a Thursday practice when his body feels like garbage. Are you going to give the same level of consistency of performance that you gave back in early August at St. John Fisher? Those are the players that Coach McDermott wants on his roster more than anything. That comes ahead of money decisions, which are a factor, but the ultimate factor of who makes this team and who doesn't is what you are willing to give, how much you are willing to compete every time you step between the lines. Practice, scrimmage, preseason, regular season, playoffs, it's got to all be the same, and there's got to be a daily commitment to improving yourself as a player. If your effort level's off or there's some kind of drop-off, you might not only be out of the lineup, you might be off this roster. We saw it happen with Quentin Spain. We've seen it happen with others. You have to give it every single day to hang on this roster year over year.
And that's why some of these guys, and he's He says some teams say that and don't follow through. This team has followed through. Guys get benched, and then guys end up off the field. Ask Quentin Spain about it.
John Feliciano went from a free agent, re-signed starter last offseason to on the bench to off the roster in a year.
Yeah.
Same thing with Darrell Williams.
They've got to continue to push and grind every day. That's the kind of pressure they're under here. And that's has been consistent throughout. And as far as, you know, what's more day-to-day game, the coaching staff, what they really want to do is know who you are all the time, every day. And then if you're at a high enough level in what you bring to the table, you're in or you're out. And that's why they want to know if you're going to take it out of gear if they give you the big contract. That's why they want to know if they go in the other room and let you work out by yourself, you're not going to sit on the bench and talk and listen to music, or you're going to work out. Those kind of things they want to know about. And that's, you know, practices, meetings, games, travel, conversation, you know, all of that stuff goes into the mix. How you are in the locker room, all of it goes into the mix of who you really are, and can you help them win, and will you help them win every single game on Sunday?
Yeah.
Starting with the next one.
It's a meat grinder, man.
It is a meat. It sounds like a meat grinder, but here's the thing. If you're that kind of guy, you thrive in that.
Yeah.
You love it. If you're the right kind of guy, that locker room is jumping because you got a ton of guys like you in the locker room. If you're that kind of guy, you don't get discouraged and grouchy and lazy and looking for a way out.
Because you're all committed in the same way.
You jump on it. You're in it. And that's the kind of guy, that's the kind of atmosphere. That's why this culture here in Buffalo has gone that way. It's you get more and more guys like that and fewer guys who are not.
Yeah.
And they're pretty good at it.
We take a break, but when we come back, an interesting comment from Josh Allen in his lengthy interview with NBC's Chris Sims as they get ready for the season opener, which will be on NBC. And we will play a snippet of that for you that got a chuckle out of me when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Wanted to pass along something that got a chuckle out of me. I was watching Chris Sims' interview with Josh Allen that just took place this past week. It's part of a pregame segment for NBC's coverage of the season opener, and it was a long interview. It was about 33 minutes in total. It's up on their YouTube channel. But Chris Sims was asking Josh if he always was blessed with a strong arm from the time he was a little kid, even playing, you know, Little League baseball where you're a pitcher, this and that. And here is Josh's answer to that question.
Your arm itself, like pitching baseball, like you did all that, and you always could throw it even when you weren't as big and everything like that, like always had an arm where you're like, wow, I can throw the ball harder than anybody around?
Yeah.
Pretty much?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So baseball, it was pitching. What other position was it?
Pitching, first base. I was actually, like, my freshman year, I played varsity, and they stuck me in right field.
Right.
To throw people out at first.
Right.
So that was kind of part of the gig there. Just, like, go out there when the ball's thrown or hit to you, just throw it hard, you know?
Yeah.
Play right field so you can gun people out at first. Yeah, here's a single to right field. Oh, no, wait, he's out. Can you imagine a 15-year-old kid gunning people out at first base from right field? That is glorious.
That
is glorious.
Yeah, you got to run that single out there, that little looper over the first
base. Oh yeah, you better leg it out, especially if you're on first and you're a right-handed batter. You got a little extra distance to run. You might be out.
Good stuff.
All right, Steve is out tomorrow. Maddie is in. Maddie and I will be joined by Mike Tirico, who'll be calling that season opener. Be good to get his thoughts on the week one matchup with the Rams. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.